This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Welcome to Net Front Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, with a special Olympic preview edition of the podcast. Nathan, it's going to be fun. The Olympics, the hockey tournament starts up next week, and the Blues and St. Louis will be well represented there.
Yeah, I think that, with between the five Blues we've got, the five locals from St. Louis we've got, there's going to be a really nice local flavor to the Olympics. You know, the nice thing about, the NHL break, right, is like a lot of times when sports shut down like that, you don't get any action, you know, in the middle of that. But yeah, the nice thing about this NHL break, or really most NHL breaks, is that there's tournament play going on in those breaks. So last year we got to watch the Four Nations during that. This year we get to watch the Olympics. I'm excited to watch what the United States does this year, but that's just me.
Yeah, and it'll be nice for the hockey community. As you mentioned, Four Nations last year, Olympics this year. In 2 years, they'll have the World Cup of Hockey. And then I believe 2 years after that will be another Olympics. So international play, best on best play, is becoming more of a regular thing because we had gone so long without it before. Last year, the Four Nations tournament, or face off with the United States, Canada, Sweden, and Finland, was really the first semblance of that in about 11 years. And now we're getting it more regularly. We'll see what the World Cup of Hockey looks like in a couple of years. St. Louis is one of the cities bidding to host at least a portion of that tournament. We'll see where that ends up going. You know, I think as we can see in the past, the World Cup was, I think it was hosted in Toronto in 2016 or so. And then the Four Nations was in Boston and Montreal. So St. Louis probably not high on the radar,
right,
to host that sort of tournament, but they are one of the cities bidding for that. And I think last year's Four Nations face-off kind of set this up well, this Olympic Games, you know, just with the sort of the animosity, the type of hockey that was being played, a lot of the storylines carry over from last year to this year.
Yeah, I think the animosity is a great thing to reference because, man, hockey's a fierce sport anyway, right? Heated rivalries, incredibly physical game. But, man, you put those guys, you know, put the stars and stripes on their chest, put that maple leaf on their chest, whatever it is, something seems to just get inside those guys and just turn that fire up to 11. You know what I mean? So yeah, watching the Four Nations was great because it was like, you know, everybody hated everybody, you know, which kind of seems like the way to kind of get a little more action out of at least a hockey game, you know? And so I'm kind of hoping the Olympics is going to be like that. I get the impression that it will be, you know, just from having watched the Four Nations, you know, and the big thing is I think that the timing is going to be weird, you know, with it being in Italy. So like, I'm going to have to watch some of these games like on a delay. So I'm going to have to turn off my phone. Like I'm going to have to turn off my notifications. Like that's the only downside to the Olympics, I think, is like, get, you know, the news getting to me before I get to the game. That's what I'm nervous about, Matt.
It's you should probably, on my phone I have a setting called no spoilers that I made. You know how you have like, what? Do not disturb. You have do not disturb or whatever. You don't get any notifications. I turn on no spoilers sometimes during games where you don't get any Twitter notifications and some of the things that I turn off are like maybe emails or something like that. Text messages from certain people that I know will be watching something so that I don't get spoiled that way. I use it a lot during college football season when I'm like watching a stream and I know someone else is maybe ahead of me or something. Yeah, just play around with that. That's what I like to do.
I'm such a boomer. I didn't even know that was a thing that can be done. Like I'm glad that you told me, but I'm going to have to Google it and learn.
Do you use Do Not Disturb? on your phone?
No, dude. My phone's, like I said, I'm a boomer. My phone's on, the ringer's on loud all the time. Like, if you call me in the middle of Walmart, it's ringing at, you know, 10 volume, and I'm answering it out loud in public. I don't care. I'm just a bad person when it comes to my phone.
Yeah, but you're also a millennial. You're not even a boomer.
I know. Yeah, but in my heart, boomer. You know, I might look like a millennial, but like, see all this gray? That's my heart coming through. That's what that is.
Yeah, I mean, the local time for some of these games, I think the first game of the men's tournament is February 11, 9:40 Central Time, Slovakia, Finland. And then there are some, as you mentioned, that get cracking pretty early.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you're going to be getting up to watch Switzerland and France at 5:10 in the morning.
Matt, I have a hard enough time waking up at 9 or 10 to do podcasts with you, let alone 5 a.m. for a hockey game.
You know, I was just looking at the schedule right now. 5:10 on February 13, Finland, Sweden. Maybe it's not a yes, but it's a maybe. I think it helps with me now, being a father to a 9-month-old that she won't be up at 5:10, but if I'm getting going for a couple hours before she does wake up, I'm in a good mood. I'm ready to go watch some Finland, Sweden. That might not be the worst thing. And really,
she could watch the hockey with you, you know, just go ahead and just start down that path now.
It happens when she was born. When she was born, we were in the hospital, and I was watching one of the playoff series on my phone as I was holding. She was like a day old. And then I believe it was the day after we got back from the hospital, we got back home, was game 7 against Winnipeg. So she watched that game with us.
So her first reference was heartbreak, is what you're telling me.
Well, I mean, her first game of being alive was actually, I think, game 6. So that she did witness a win before being home for the game 7.
But the second experience was heartbreak. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So,
but maybe with now the PWHL and all that, maybe one day that'll inspire her. She'll be like, I'm never having this heartbreak again. I'm going to join one of the PWHL teams. We'll never lose. And that's how it happens.
Adam Lowry's ghost can't haunt me anymore.
That's right. That's right. Imagine that's the response. Cole in 30 Fendi, years.
You can't do anything to me.
That's right. I love that.
So the way we're going to go through this right now, we're going to go through the five Blues of the Olympics. We'll go to the five St. Louis Natives, and then we'll finish up with some storylines, key storylines that we are looking forward to following. So the five Blues at the Olympics, we got Jordan Bennington, Colton Pareto for Canada, Philip Roberg for Sweden, Pew Suter for Switzerland, and Dalibor Dvorsky representing Slovakia. Now, with Jordan Bennington, to me, he is the most interesting guy to look at out of these five guys, because he's had a bad season. Obviously, the Four Nations face-off last year in the final, it was huge for him just to be making those clutch saves to win another championship on that stage, a big boost to his reputation, to how he's viewed around the league. But now it's kind of an open question. Will he or won't he start for Team Canada? They also have Logan Thompson. They have Darcy Kemper. They have Jordan Bennington. Thompson's probably been the best goalie this season out of those three. Kemper and Bennington have Stanley Cups in their career. And Bennington has that history with Team Canada, not only winning the Four Nations last year, but also playing in the World Championships in recent years. He has that, I don't know if preferential treatment is quite the right word, but he has familiarity with the coaching staff, with Hockey Canada, and obviously with Doug Armstrong. So, Nathan, to me, Jordan Bennington's the most interesting Blue to watch at this Olympics.
Oh, without a question. I mean, if for multiple reasons. The first is that, you know, you saw him last year and what he was able to do, at least in the final, and that really sparked a change in him specifically, but in the Blues in the second half last year after the Four Nations. Now, the Blues are in a position right now where I don't know that that's going to happen this year. But, you know, the positivity that could come from, you know, hey, our longtime number one franchise icon goaltender, you know, got back on the international stage and finally figured it out. Even if you can't make the playoffs this season, that's a good thing. So, I mean, that's something that's important to watch for.
And you know what? It could impact trade value too,
right? That's right.
I think teams around the league can look at Bennington's season this year and be like, well, he hasn't been very good, but he still has that reputation as a big game goalie, just based on his run in 2019, his performance in 2022, I believe, those playoffs, when they beat the Wild, he got hurt against the Avalanche, the Winter Classics that he's played in, going back to Toronto a lot of times, those kind of stars. Like, he's had big games that he's delivered in, and he obviously the Four Nations final. Like, he's had that reputation, and if he has a strong showing in the Olympics, it could prove to other GMs that, hey, like, he still has it in him. He still has that fire. I guess his fire is always there, but maybe that characteristic that remains there despite the regular season numbers. And if that impacts his trade value, if that impacts his desire to play more meaningful games, because let's be honest, if we're looking at the Blues right now, they're not going to play a meaningful game for another 8 months at best, right? The next two months aren't going to be meaningful games. And you get to October, and that's when you start this new season. And that's at best, right? Maybe who knows if the team looks like in October, if they're going to be in a position to at least challenge for a playoff spot or what. Because at best right now, we're looking at 8 months till meaningful hockey. And if Jordan Binnington plays these Olympic games well for Team Canada, if he plays in a way that opens teams around the league's eyes and his own eyes to say, I want more of this. I want to play more high level, high consequence hockey. Yeah. And that's just not going to happen in St. Louis. I wonder if it's kind of a two-way street. Now, that's just me theorizing.
Sure.
We'll see what actually happens, right?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a thing that makes sense, though. I mean, I know you're just kind of spitballing, but, like, based on what we've seen and heard, frankly, from Binnington, like, not necessarily about that specifically, but just, you know, that fire and the competitiveness and, you know, who he is as an athlete, you know, that would make total sense to me. I mean, that seems like that would align completely with what we know about Jordan Binnington. And the other thing is that, you know, not only would he presumably be more likely to want to play that high level, competitive, meaningful hockey, he is better in those games, right? So, like, it seems to me that that would be not just a win-win for the Blues, but probably a win-win for him too, depending on, you know, how it shakes out. I mean, you know, you never know, obviously, but, like, you're right. He's a guy who, you know, when the big bright lights are on, he shows out, you know, and they're for a team that's either looking to make a playoff run or already kind of in that direction and looking to make a legitimate Stanley Cup run, having a guy like that in your locker room and in your nets, pretty big deal, as we've seen in St. Louis since, what, 2017, something like that? When did he take the starting job?
Late 2018, yeah.
Okay, 18.
Yeah, I think that's part of his mythology right now. Like, that's part of his mystique that he has that in big moments. And it's also something that people look for, right? They look at big games and say, oh, can he prove us right again? Yeah. And that's something I think the playoffs can do, especially for a goalie. And it's lasted for quite some time for Binnington. Now, Colton Parayko, his Team Canada teammate, had kind of a down year offensively, only has one goal this season. He scored it in Nashville earlier this week, but he'll be asked to take on top matchups. That's kind of what he does every night. He'll be taking some minutes on the penalty kill, and he's not going to be playing top pair minutes. Obviously, that'll go to Chamlokar and presumably partner Devon Taves, but he will take some difficult matchups because that's just what he does. And you know, we'll see if he can look more like himself in a tournament like this versus what he's looked like all year.
Yeah, he's a guy who doesn't necessarily always stand out in the stat sheet, right? And, like, part of that's by design, part of it's from a down season this year. But the other, you know, thing about, you know, okay, we talked about Binnington, right? Best on best and rising to the occasion. Imagine what Parayko could potentially do with more talent around him. You know, we may see, I don't want to say a breakout, right? Because he's a veteran at this point. It's not really a breakout, but yeah, we could see him bust the slump. Is maybe that the way to say it? You know, after some best on best in the Olympics too. So, I mean, yeah, Binnington's the guy to watch, I think, for Blues fans. But man, Parayko could have the same kind of turnaround from this. I mean, and they're not the only ones. I mean, like the guy I'm most excited to watch out of the Blues is Dvorsky. Like seeing what kind of leap he can make in this kind of best on best competition. I think it could do wonders for his development. And, you know, if we could see a star turn from him here, that would be a huge deal. But yeah, Parayko and Binnington, I think, are probably the most interesting, you know, at large.
Sure. Yeah. Let's just jump to Dvorsky now. I mean, just looking at the Slovakian roster, he has a chance to be the top line center for Slovakia. Yep. They have some guys playing in the KHL. Adam Ruzicka has played in the NHL before. He's now in Russia. They have some guys playing in Slovakia and the Czech League over there. So they have European players that can play that position on their team. But as far as NHL guys right now, it's Dvorsky would be kind of that guy. So I wonder how his usage shakes out with the rest of the roster and how they look at a young guy like him, who has had a lot of international experience for Slovakia. Remember, he played for them four times at the World Juniors, and he played for them in the World Championships. It wasn't always pretty at the World Championships. He was scratched there. So I'm not saying he's a surefire lock to be the top line center, but if you look at where guys are playing right now, what position they play up front, you can make the argument that he could be there. Now, if he does get that task, be a huge test in the group stage against Finland and Sweden. It would be a bigger test against Finland if Alexander Barkov was playing, but obviously he's not. So their top center is probably Sebastian Aho, Roope Hintz, one of those guys. And Sweden, obviously we know how deep they can run, particularly on the blue line, but up front as well. I mean, they have a lot of guys that they can put at the middle. I mean, Eriksson Ek will probably be down the lineup a little bit. Elias Lindholm's there. Elias Pettersson's there. They have Mika Zibanejad, Landeskog, and Nylander on the wing. So there's a lot of firepower up front there that can kind of challenge a young center like Dvorsky. And I'm curious to see what the usage is for him, to see how heavy they give him, what kind of matchups he gets, and what he does in those minutes.
Yeah, I think, and that's kind of what I was kind of leaning into, right? Was like, this is, let's politely say underdog team versus some of these others, right?
They could be Italy, but they probably be undermanned against Sweden and Finland.
Right. And, it's an opportunity for, I don't want to say lesser talent, but maybe just, you know, Dvorsky, should he stand out against bigger talent, bigger names, let's say that, you know, if he can, he doesn't have to dominate, I don't think, for that to be successful. I think if he gets in there and looks like he's holding his own against some of those stars, then I think that's a really successful Olympics for him. And I think I would be quite pleased with that. I think the Blues and Blues fans would be quite pleased with that. Waking up to watch him at like 5 o'clock in the morning to see if that happens, I don't know. But I might have to watch those later. I'll have to try that no spoilers phone setting you were talking about earlier.
Sure. Now, with Philip Broberg, he was not on Sweden's Four Nations face-off roster. He does make the Olympic roster now. And when it first happened, when he was first named to the team, I wasn't sure how much playing time he would get. You know, if you look at the Swedish blue line, they have Gustav Forsling and Jonas Brodin, who kind of filled shutdown roles. Obviously, he's not going to be getting power play time on that team with Dahlin and Carlson and Hedman, Anderson. You have all those guys that are a lot better offensively. So he's not even going to sniff power play time on Sweden. But it would be kind of that shutdown role. And now, Jonas Brodin out with an injury. He was replaced by Hampus Lindholm. And now you look at it, you say, you know, I could see a path for him to be, you know, playing a lot bigger minutes for Sweden versus when the roster was first announced. And I think that's it's going to be interesting for him. Like we talked about Parayko in a shutdown role, like we talked about Dvorsky taking on more talented players. Like this is kind of a both of those in one for Philip Roberg.
Yeah, and he's had a great season for the Blues too, yeah. Right? So like maybe not a breakout, right? But like the next step in his kind of evolution as a player. Sure. And I think this these Olympics come at a really interesting time for him. Because I don't want to say coming off because I guess they're still in the middle of it, but in the middle of one of his best seasons as a pro, probably his best season as a pro. You know, with the hype and the big lights and, you know, all that of the Olympics, you know, if he can seize a larger share of the playing time and if he can keep playing the way that he's been playing with the Blues, you know, I think that's a good opportunity to take the next step in his evolution as a player, right? Like he's clearly already taken a step this season. We could maybe see him take another one here in the Olympics, you know, with everything on the line there and all that entails. So yeah, I mean, watching his playing time, watching how successful he is, watching, you know, who he, not just that he's playing, right? But like who he's matched up with, who he's trusted, you know, to play against, those, I think those will be big clues on where he is now and where he's headed. So I think there's a lot that Blues fans can glean from their five guys, you know, how they perform in the Olympics, take that and bring that back to St. Louis. I think there's a lot to watch and hold on to there.
Yeah. And Broberg, I mean, he's been basically their best player, most consistent player. And as you mentioned, last year is probably his breakout where he goes from, fringe minor leader, third pair guy in Edmonton, healthy scratch in the playoffs until later on against Florida, comes in last year, takes on a top four role. This year he's taken on top pair minutes, tough matchups, a lot of penalty killing. Like it's more of an evolution, and I think the next step for him in the NHL is that offensive side that we talked about. Yep. I don't think he's going to be quite there soon. I see him having a lot of defensive plays, anticipating pucks, anticipating things like that. But the puck play itself sometimes can be lacking. Sometimes he makes a no-handed or a no-look drop pass to Alexei Toropchenko for a goal in Dallas. Like sometimes those things happen. So Philip Roberg, I can also imagine this might not be his last Olympics. If he's making this team right now for Sweden, he is the youngest defenseman they have on this roster. He'll probably be making this roster again, so good for him, and we'll see how it looks in the future for him. Now the last Blue that we need to talk about right now is Pugh Suter and Switzerland. They have a path out of their group. So their group is Canada, Czech, France, and Switzerland. France, they're only in the tournament because Russia is not allowed in. They lost their qualifier last year. Russia is still not allowed to participate in international hockey. So France gets the nod and old friend Alexander Texier. Now, Switzerland, they should beat France. They could give the Czechs a little bit of a game. And hockey, we know, is you can have some funny results sometimes. Obviously, we all expect Canada to come out of this group. But we'll see if Switzerland can get out of here. And the Swiss have some high end players. When you look at Nico Hischier, Kevin Fiala, Timo Meier, Roman Josi, and then you have Pugh Suter, who has actually played in the Olympics before. He played in 2018. I have to think he's one of the few returnees in the hockey tournament that has played in the Olympics before. So I think for me, with Suter, it's kind of like Binnington in the sense that can a good tournament impact his trade value? Because he is a center. He is on a good contract. Last year, he was probably the second most coveted center on the free agent market. And he ended up in St. Louis. And so I wonder if he has a good showing, does that impact his trade value? Because clearly, he's not going to be part of the core. He was acquired to help this group right now. And right now that group isn't going anywhere. So we'll see if the Olympics can impact his trade value.
Sounds like we're rooting for big performances from every Blues player in the Olympics.
I mean, Blues fans should be, right?
Yeah, but I mean, for reasons that like don't necessarily have to do with anything, like with the success of the individual player, right? Maybe Broberg, I guess, and Dvorsky, but the other three is like, we need to kind of see where we're going here, you know? So there's like, it's the bigger picture, I guess, to watch, you know? We've kind of talked about the minutiae of like this game and these matchups and, you know, but like, it's a big picture, I think, kind of view for most of those guys. We're trying to see what we can get out of them, you know?
Yeah.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
Discover what BetterHelp Online Therapy can do for you. Visit BetterHelp.com today.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Now, St. Louis natives, there's five of them. A lot of you guys already know a few of the big names. So there's Brady and Matthew Tkachuk with Team USA, Clayton Keller also on Team USA, Nick Saracino, who was our podcast guest last week on Team Italy.
And everyone knew about him because he was on the podcast.
Everyone listened to the podcast.
All the people, yeah.
I mean, if you're listening to this episode right now, chances are you listened to the last one about
100%.
With Nick Saracino. So, and then Joy Dunn, who is on the USA women's team. So let's start with the Tkachuks. Obviously, everyone knows the Tkachuks. There's not much to be said about them. The one thing that I will note with the Olympic rules, so the Tkachuk brothers made huge splashes last year with their fights against Canada,
mm-hmm.
right? That game in Montreal. Matthew Tkachuk fights Brandon Hagel. Brady Tkachuk fights Sam Bennett. They get a lot of notoriety out of that. Now, fighting in the Olympics is not allowed.
Ooh.
There is obviously the 5-minute major, but it is within the referee's discretion to assess a game misconduct, which would kick you out of the game. And there's also potential supplemental discipline that could result in suspensions and stuff. So fighting is just not a part of the Olympic game. That's one of the main rule changes. One of the other differences you'll see in plays, the ice sheet is slightly shorter. So typically the Olympic rink is wider and around the same length as an NHL rink. But they made the agreement to play on an NHL-sized rink, which means a narrower width. But for some reason, that's about 3 feet shorter than a normal NHL-sized sheet. So that difference has been taken out of the neutral zone. The offensive and defensive zones are the same. The neutral zone is just a little tiny box. And those will be the main rule differences you'll see. But for the Tkachuks, it's just there's no fighting in these games.
There's no fighting in, well, I was going to say in baseball, but it's hockey. Do you think that the 3-foot shorter neutral zone will change the pace of the game? Like, is 3 foot enough to do that? I mean, I know like in other areas of the world, the ice is significantly larger, right? So like, and that changes the way the game is played. Do you think that 3-foot difference will maybe speed things up for us? Or
I think not? It will a little bit, but I also think the game's going to be so fast anyway that it's going to be tough to notice the difference. Like if you're driving 95, is 100 that much different?
Right. Yeah. Well,
like,
it does feel different once you see the speedometer hit 100. Yeah. I think we all know that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Everyone knows when you drive 100, it feels different.
Anybody who's ever driven 100 knows that 99 and 100 do feel very different.
Nathan, are you living your life a quarter mile at a time? Is that what you're talking
about? I'm not anymore. But when I was a younger man, I did a lot of really dumb things. Yeah.
So Clayton Keller is the third St. Louis native on the Team USA men's team. He was not on the Four Nations roster last year, made the Olympic roster this year. Good for him with that. And obviously it has to be an emotional experience this time going to the Olympics after the loss of his father earlier this season. So congrats to Clayton Keller. Obviously you have a huge season in Utah, has been one of the best, obviously one of the best St. Louis players to play in the NHL. And he should provide some scoring punch that the United States needs.
Yeah, I think we'll see him. Losing my earbud there. I think we'll see him. Probably. I don't want to say like be a scratch a lot, but I think he'll be toward the bottom of the lineup. But I think he'll be fun to watch. Not just because of the St. Louis connection. Obviously that's going to be a big part of it, and certainly for maybe not all of these guys, but some of these guys, that's going to be kind of the primary driver for folks in our area, you know, watching them, right? But like Clayton Keller's you're right, he's had a great season. That's the first thing that I was I was going to say about him before you beat me to it. But you know, he's 27, so he's young. He's going to potentially, assuming we keep play, you know, NHL players in the Olympics and don't take him out again, he's a guy who's, you know, potentially going to get a chance to do this again. And so, you know, having this experience and getting to I guess make his debut. I don't want to say like on the international stage, right? Because I'm sure he's played international hockey before, but on the Olympic stage, I think would be a big deal for him, you know, 4 years from now when he's 31 and playing in the Olympics, you know?
Yeah. And just a programming note on Clayton Keller, number 91 for Team USA, his normal number 9 that he wears in Utah is taken by Jack Eichel. So number 91 in your program and number 1 in your hearts, Clayton Keller.
Oh, that's good. I love that.
There you go.
91 on your programs and 90. Yeah, that's good. All right. I'm sorry. That was I just jumped in there with it. You just really touched my heart there, and I had to jump
there
in.
There you go. Nick Saracino, Team Italy, CBC grad, went to Providence, has played in Italy for the last 4 years. If you need to know more about him, listen to the last podcast. I don't think we need to talk about him too much after we did
last time. You could just stop into Bartolino's on the Hill.
That's right. Yeah. Stop
there. How's old Nick doing? You know, that's great. You know,
And then the last St. Louis native in the Olympics, Joy Dunn, playing for the USA women. She is a player. She plays at Ohio State normally. She got 44 points in 24 games there. She scored in the first game that the USA women had already. So she's already on the board in the Olympics and really part of one of the bigger hockey families in St. Louis. Her sister, Jincy Rose, plays in the PWHL. Her brother, Josh, is in the Sabres organization. So congrats to the Dunn family and Joy Dunn.
Yeah, and she's already got gold in international competition, too. I think that we might get to see a little bit more of that this year.
Yeah. So those are the five Blues at the Olympics. Those are the five St. Louis natives at the Olympics. Nathan, let's move on to storylines to watch here. Now, you got three main ones. I got two main ones. So I'll let you kick it off, and then we'll
just kind of wrap around. Forth. Yeah. Okay. Cool. I'm good with that. So the big one, I think, and this is one that kind of I think folks have been watching literally for a while, but also because it's kind of been the talk of the tournament. This is the first time in many years that NHL players have been allowed to play in the Olympics. You know, this is the number one league in the world. This is where most of, I guess maybe not all of, but most of the best talent in the world goes, and allowing NHL players back into the Olympics is going to change the complexion of what the tournament looks like, right? That level of talent, not having been there, is going to change how it looks now versus how it looked in 22, right? So, I think that, we've talked about some of the Blues players to watch. We've talked about the St. Louis players to watch. But the reality is that there are so many NHL stars, household names that we are used to, hearing about, at least here in the States, right, that will finally get their chance to shine on this Olympic stage. And it's not just you know, it's not just that talent. There are some guys who are making their debuts here. You know, their Olympic debuts here. You have to look at, like, you know, we've talked about Binnington and getting his chance to kind of come back. And we've talked about, you know, Parayko and his chance to kind of raise his trade value, right? I think that there are some guys who we are going to see for the first time here in the Olympics. Let me see here. I pull up the U.S. Olympic roster so I can tell you exactly who is the first one. I had it written down and then I lost my note. That's what I get for having the kind of morning that I had. But you've got guys that are going to be here that are here for the first time, right? And so we're going to get to see, you know, players that we haven't ever, you know, seen at the. We've seen them in international competition, but never the Olympics. So like an Austin Matthews, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, there are, and that's just the U.S., but there are a handful of guys out there that are big hockey names who we are going to see, you know, make their debut, play for the first time at the Olympics. And I think that, you know, one of the things about that is that you can always see, you know, you see that breakout from a guy, or you see that, you know, that this is where it clicks. And so for a lot of guys, it's not just for fans, right? For fans, this is where it changes because we get to see the highest level of competition there. But for some of these players, this is where it changes too, because that best on best competition is something that can sometimes flip a switch for some of those guys, you know, oh, okay, this is what I need to do to go to the next level. And then they do. So I think we might get a chance to see, you know, not just some great hockey. I mean, I think we're definitely going to see that, but we might get to see kind of an evolution of a handful of players who are getting to be here for the first time. So I think that's, you know, if you made me pick the first one, I would go NHL players being here for the first time. And I guess as an aside to that, how many of these players are here for the first time and have the chance to learn from this experience for the first time?
Yeah, it's the first time the NHL players have been in the Olympics since 2014 in Sochi, and it hasn't really had the same cachet 2018, 2022 without those players. I mean, 2022, the NHL was supposed to go, but COVID got in the way of that. They canceled their participation in that tournament. And now, seriously, you can think back to 22, and I think people would know that Finland won the gold medal, but it wouldn't be a household answer. You would think in 2018, you say, okay, well, the Russians won, but again, you wouldn't know that would be an obvious answer. But you know, 2014, you think about Canada, and for me, when I was covering the Stars, a lot of the talk was about Jamie Benn on a line with mm-hmm. Corey Perry. Mm-hmm. So like, people remember that, or people remember Sidney Crosby's golden goal in Vancouver in 2010. These are just things that people remember because of who's in it. And people don't remember, you know, the 2018 tournament in Pyeongchang or the 2022 tournament in Beijing just because the NHL players weren't in it. And so hope to have some memorable moments as a fan watching this version of the tournament.
I'm so glad that you said that the way that you said that, because it's going to play right into my number two, but I'm going to hold on to that. I listed Matthews, but some of the other players, just to throw some out there who on the American team anyway, who are making their debuts. We talked about the Tkachuks. They're both making their Olympic debuts. Jack Eichel, Quinn Hughes, Charlie McAvoy. All those guys will be making their Olympic debuts for the U.S. That's to say nothing of Canada, you know, and any of the other teams where we're going to see NHL players making their Olympic debuts. But at least on the American team, that's a handful there to keep your eyes on in their first shot at Olympic hockey.
Yeah. Now, for me, one of the main storylines to watch, and it has kind of been throughout the entire team selection process, can the United States score enough? Can they score enough goals? Because, look, the U.S., they left off Jason Robertson. They left off Cole Caulfield. They don't have, you know, their highest scoring defenseman in Lane Hudson. Like, they left off some of their most offensively gifted players. If you look at goal scorers that are American this year, Jason Robertson has 32 goals. Jeez. That is the most in the NHL among Americans, tied with Cole Caulfield, 32 goals, not on the team. Matt Boldy has 32 as well. He is on the team, so they do have that. But even Alex DeBrincat has 30. He's not on the team. Like, they have some sort of role players when you look at Vincent Trocheck, JT Miller, that they chose to go with instead of Jason Robertson, Cole Caulfield, and a guy like Lane Hudson, who is, sorry, I misspoke, he's their second highest scoring defenseman behind Zach Werenski. So they left some firepower at home. If you look at the Four Nations last year, obviously they beat Canada in the round robin. They lost in the final. And in the final, they came up one goal short. And that was with the Hart Trophy winner in net. So to me, the question is, can they score enough with the guys that they left at home? And I think leaving Jason Robertson at home was just an unconscionable mistake, if I'm being quite honest. But that's going to be something that if they win gold, no one's going to really question.
Yeah, no one's going to care about that. Yeah.
But if they can't score enough and they left Robertson and Caulfield at home, man, that's going to be a big missed opportunity.
Do you think that they were left off the roster because the goaltending and the defensive side, maybe not necessarily the scoring defensive side, but the actual defense of the defensive side is so deep on the American side? Like, felt like we just didn't need it or something?
I think that they were left off in Robertson's case because he's got a reputation that precedes what the actual play is. He's got a reputation as a offensive only guy who only scores goals, and that's just not true. He wins battles, he gets into the dirty areas, he scores goals around the net. Like, he might not play his size. He's 6'3". He might not play to his size and be physical that way, but I've seen him lay out Tyler Myers. I've seen him throw big hits. I mean, he broke Jordan Kyrou's nose with an accidental elbow a few weeks ago. Like, this is not someone who is afraid of contact or is a one-trick pony. And so I think he has that reputation. And I think the other part that kind of dings Robertson, his playoff numbers. Like, everything he's done in the regular season has been great, but his playoff numbers just aren't there right now. And part of it's probably because of the way he skates. He's not a very good skater. The game gets a lot faster in the playoffs, and the game is very fast in the Olympics. So I wonder if that's part of it. But everything about his game points to the fact that he can overcome those things. And I think that was a big mistake by Bill Guerin and the United States to not take their most productive player over the last few years in the NHL.
Was he with the team when you were there in Dallas? Did you cover him directly?
Yeah.
So you've seen firsthand that he can do exactly what, you know, you're saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he had his big breakout when I left midseason to go from Dallas to St. Louis. That was when he kind of finished in the top five of Hart Trophy voting, I believe. Mm-hmm. That's when he had 100 points and scored almost 50 goals. So, I was there for kind of his breakout and everything that he kind of developed into there. But besides that, I think just looking objectively at it, if you look at the top goal score, the top point scorers in the NHL, you can just go down the list and pretty much everyone is either in the Olympics or not eligible for the Olympics. Right. So McDavid, McKinnon, Kucherov, he's obviously Russia's not in, but Celebrini, Dreisaitl, Pasternak, Kaprizov, Russia's not in, Rantanen, Scheifele is actually not playing. So like, that's one of the top scorers is not in, but especially Scheifele and Robertson are the only guys in the top 13 that aren't in the Olympics. So we'll see. As we said, I mean, if the U.S. wins gold, this won't be a big talking point, but if they end up short, this will be an unforced error.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single, do or die game 7, a full week of heavy hitting back and forth series? Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the chase for the cup on ESPN and TNT starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Well, that's a great transition into my number two storyline to watch, Matt. Because did you know that the U.S. hasn't won gold at the Olympics since the 1980 Miracle on Ice?
1980. Did they make a movie about that, or
I don't know if it was a, you know, it, I don't know. I think they did. I think I heard about it. I heard about a movie called Miracle on Ice. It might have been about figure skating. I don't know. No, I'm kidding. Obviously, they made that movie. That was a terrible joke. Yeah, we haven't won gold since the 1980 Miracle on Ice. Now, let's, you know, caveat, you mentioned Russia's not here. There are several players ineligible for various reasons. So maybe it's not a one-to-one, right? I certainly don't mean to suggest that it will be. But the United States seems like this is probably the best shot we've had to have a gold medal in quite a long time. Now, that's part of that's because we've not had NHL players, right, in the Olympics for the past several years. But outside of the scoring, which you've mentioned, you know, the goaltending is deep. The defense is deep. You know, I think we've got, assuming the Tkachuks can not throw hands and pick up 5-minute majors, you know, I think there's some really interesting talent there that, you know, it does kind of seem like there, you know, it's a two horse race here. It's the United States and Canada. And, you know, I think there are a million different ways it could go, you know, and nobody ever really knows. But if you asked me to call it right now, I would call it a US Canada final. Plan for the gold medal. And man, you know just as well as I do, any given team, any given day, I think mm-hmm. the Canadian team is more talented. You know, I think if you made me pick one, it would be the Canadian team, but I think this is the first year in a very long time that the United States has a legitimate shot to win Olympic hockey gold on the men's side. And that would be, honestly, that would be the thing that, like, I would hope for most, you know, in watching this. Like, don't get me wrong, I want to see Binnington do well. I want to see Parayko do well. But man, the Olympics just stir something up in me where I just give the Americans all the gold, you know. And so, you know, it's like that stuff just gets me going in the Olympics. And I think this might be the first time in a very long time. Maybe it doesn't happen, but there's a shot that it happens.
Yeah, they feel a lot deeper, and that's what makes the roster construction a little bit still perplexing to me, just because you have so much talent in the United States now. Like, picking role players, picking you know, the right players versus the best players, as old Herb Brooks would have said. Let me say, I'm not looking for the best players, I'm looking for the right ones.
Yeah, and that's I like that.
The U.S. doesn't have to do that anymore, though. They have so much talent that they don't need to pick and choose, so to speak, they're the right guys. But you're right, they have a very talented squad. They're right there with Canada, and it should be fun if those two match up in the gold medal match.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, that's the one where, like, we should move the time to align with North America, right? Like, that one, I don't know when the final is set for off the top of my head, but if it's like a 5 a.m., we need to move that to, like, noon, 2 o'clock in the United States, something like that. Somewhere we can watch it easy, you know. That's going to be a great game.
7:10 Central Time.
A.M.?
A.M. 7:10 on February 22nd.
This is terrible. I mean, okay, I'll get up and watch it, but I'm going to be mad about it. I just want to be clear about that.
You're going to be watching it under protest, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to watch it, and I'm just in silence. I won't cheer for anybody. I'm just going to be angry about it.
That's just because you don't want to wake up anyone else. It's a Sunday, though. It's a Sunday morning.
Well, I got to work on Sunday, so luckily, maybe it's a good thing it's in the morning, because then I can watch it, and then I can go start my shift in the afternoon. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that works out.
Sure. So my other big storyline to watch has to do with something we've already talked about, and that's Canadian goaltending. I think when you look at that Team USA roster, the goalies they have with Hellebuck, Ottinger, and Swayman, just a completely different world than Binnington, Thompson, Kemper. And this was a Canadian side that, you know, used to put out Roberto Luongo, used to put out Carey Price, used to put out Martin Brodeur. Like, that used to be the legacy of Canadian goaltending. And right now we're talking about three guys that, you know, you don't know who's going to be the guy at the end.
Yeah.
And, the rest of the Canadian roster obviously is very talented, very stacked. They have the two best players in the world up front with Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, and not to mention Sidney Crosby. He's okay too. So
McDavid's another one making his debut. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, they have a lot of things going right, but there's the old saying that goaltending is most of the game. Unless you don't have any, then it's all of the game, right?
Yeah.
And so if the goaltending isn't there for Canada, then I don't know what they're going to be doing to overcome that, especially against higher end teams like the United States, Finland, Sweden. I'm sure even the Czechs can give them a nice little battle. So that'll be my other storyline to watch besides the USA scoring.
Counting on that Jordan Binnington rising to the big game and being ready to stop everything just because he's got his blood flowing. That sounds like what Canada's doing.
I mean, it is a hope, but we all know
there are worse strategies.
Hope is not a strategy, though, Nathan. Come on now.
No, but I mean, like having Binnington and just planning on him being big game Binner, like that's a decent strategy. I mean, it has been. I don't know if it will be. Okay, fair enough. My last one to watch, Matt. So we've talked about debuting stars. There'll be so many because of the NHL players being allowed for the first time. But the other thing is, like, there are some, the opposite end of that is there are going to be some players who are saying goodbye here at these Olympics. These will be the last time. This will be the last time that they play at the Olympics. Sidney Crosby is probably the biggest example on the men's side. He's 38. This will be his last Olympics. You know, obviously we won't get Alex Ovechkin, but this would have been his last Olympics if he had been eligible. And on the women's side, we'll get Hillary Knight. She's planning on retiring. This will be her last Olympics as well. So, you know, there's a lot of hellos here, you know, with NHL players being allowed for the first time in a long time. But there's also a handful of big goodbyes. And I think it's important that we take the time to kind of appreciate those players who are here for their last time while we have the chance.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that this would have been Crosby's fifth Olympics if the NHL players went in 18 and 22. Mm-hmm. Like he was there in 2010, in 2014. He would have been there in 18, 22. He's still there in 26. Like the longevity is incredible to think that you're at a level high enough to play in the Olympics for Team Canada across a 16-year period.
Yeah, this isn't Team France. This is Team Canada.
Yeah. And really, that's what makes like Matlin Celebrini making this Canadian roster so impressive, because he's 20 years old, I believe, right? So like has that same possibility to do this for the next 16 years and go to five Olympics and do that. And you mentioned Hillary Knight. I don't know this for a fact, but I believe this is also her fifth Olympics, right? Like this is
I think that is right, yeah.
So incredible longevity on her side as well, to be playing that long and at such a high level to represent the Americans that many times. So it's a good point there, Nathan, and that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I was just looking to see about, yeah, so she has competed, Hillary Knight, let me try that again, has competed in four Winter Olympics. She started in 2010, 14, mm-hmm. 18, 22, and then this year. So yeah, five, you nailed it.
Yeah, so.
In case you were curious, in international play, just because I've got it up here, she has, and this is between the Olympics and World Championships, she has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 gold medals. And 8 silvers in international competition. So very highly decorated international hockey player.
And we talked about USA Canada men, USA Canada women. Like that is
a
rivalry.
Yeah. I hope those are both the championship games, and honestly put them back to back. Let's just don't even clean up the ice in between. Just let's go nuts, you know.
You know what? Let's see when the U.S. or the U.S. women's gold medal, when the gold medal match for the women's tournament is,
you go ahead and you pencil the U.S. women in there. That's how I feel
about it. February 19 at 12:10 Central Time.
See, that's not. I want them back to back. You know, it's like they should put me in charge of the scheduling of the Olympics. I feel like
maybe you should have been in charge of building the buildings too, right? That would have been in charge.
Oh, you don't want me anywhere near building anything. That's a terrible idea. I can come up with a schedule, but building stuff, hammers and nails, I ain't built for that.
No.
That's why I talk to you on a hockey podcast instead of work construction.
You know, one of my good friends in the industry, he always used to say, you know what? could be roofing houses. And instead, we're at a hockey arena watching guys skate around. So we're pretty lucky to do what we do. And it would be fun watching some of this high-level hockey coming up in the Olympic Games. So
I can't wait.
Nathan, you got anything else there?
No. I'm so excited for this hockey. I'm not excited for the wake up at 7 a.m. to watch it, but I'm excited for the rest of it.
Yeah, it should be fun. So that's Nathan. I'm Matt. This was NetFriend Presents. We'll see you next week.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.